team with high hopes and high expectations deserve high-quality coverage.
Matthews with a shot, score! Marner, score! Wee Willie Nylander!
Good thing you've come to the right place. You're listening to Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
Here's Marner to the net. Scores! Mitch Marner comes off the bench, and the pass ahead from Muzzin is right on the button. Down into the corner, Richie got it freed up in front. They score! A beautiful pass from Camp and Kasha coming down the slot. It's 2-0 for Bunting. Bunting centers! They score! Mitch Marner going to the net, and Bunting got it through, and the Leafs with a 3-0 lead. Joseph Woll will stop everything in his way and record a shutout in his second victory.
Busy weekend for the Leafs, back-to-back. They were shut out for the first time this season against the Pittsburgh Penguins at home on Saturday, but then they came back with a huge effort last night in New York, 3-0. It was Joseph Woll's first ever NHL shutout. Julie Tesciere, Al's brother, Mike DiStefano, with you as always on Leafs Lunch. And AB, if you're keeping track, at UBS Arena, the Isles are 0-2. John Tavares, however, 1-0.
Oh, that's such a gutting stat to anyone who's an Islanders fan, which if you are, well, you listen to Leafs Lunch, so I don't know what you're doing there. But yeah, the Maple Leafs came out, they played really, really well, which, you know, you got it. That building was loud.
It was rocking.
Man. That was a rocking building early on. And of course, Tavares, he heard the boo birds. He knew he was going to, but they really did a good job of kind of stymieing the Islanders, and it took the crowd out of it. And then from there, they kind of just locked things down. It was a pretty good game. They were dialed in for right for the puck drop. I know Mitch Marner said right away, you know, that's what they had to do, take the crowd out of it. And then they end up scoring a goal early on the shorthanded. And then away they went, locked it down, played a solid, sound defensive game once again.
Yeah, you said Mitch Marner right away. And I have to pump my own tires here. I was just telling you this before we came on the air. As soon as Mitch Marner came on the ice last night, he was cycling just inside the blue line. He was creating space for himself. And I said aloud, AB, I said, Mitch Marner's going to have a big night tonight. He's feeling crafty. He's got the Magic Mitch vibes happening. And by the way, we'll also have Mystic Mike Johnson on at 12:05 to break down this weekend. And then at 12:30, we'll have Alexi Lafreniere on of the New York Rangers. So that's pretty cool.
I had to put the French accent on that one there.
My mom didn't. I always get that. My mom did not send me to French immersion for 12 years of my life just for me to call him Alexis Lafreniere or whatever. Like, I'm not doing that.
Fair enough. But yeah, like Mitch Marner last night, you said it. He was buzzing right from the drop of the puck and finished tonight with 2 goals, had 4 shots on net. You know, he was really, really good, and in all aspects of the game too, not just, you know, offensively, but what he always does on the penalty kill. You know, the second goal, I mean, he intercepts a cross ice pass, gets it over to Bunting, a nice little give and go, and sets himself up for a really nice second goal to give them that really big cushion. So Mitch Marner was fantastic, and you know, he's been really on one ever since he started to get going in that game against, was the Detroit game, I think it was, where he finally got off the scoring schneid. He really hasn't looked back, regardless if he was with Tavares. Now he's back with Matthews. He's still finding ways to be productive and get on the score sheet.
Yeah, and when he's playing like that, he's just he was the first team, like, left winger last year in the league. He's just one of the most dynamic guys in the league, so can't ignore Mitch Marner ever when he's on the ice. One thing, special teams, we were talking about last week, getting so much better. The power play looked sick last week.
Yeah.
The penalty kill still looks amazing. But the power play this weekend looked a little bit dead. 0-for-7, just 5 shots on goal.
Yeah, and they had that failed 5-on-3.
You knew
again.
The game was over then.
They've been gross at 5-on-3s for whatever reason. But they had really... they kind of went back to what was going on earlier. They're having troubles gaining the zone, having troubles getting set up. And I mean, just 5 shots on goal through 7 power play opportunities, including a 5-on-3. That's not a lot of production for your power play. And something that I noticed that they kind of have gone away with, at least over the course of the last couple of games. So an extremely small sample size, but they weren't utilizing the man down low. And when Marner was being used down low, it really opened things up, I felt. And that's where their power play was starting to really succeed. It was giving them a different look. It didn't didn't seem like there was all that much going on with the power play. They really weren't able to gain the zone all too much. And then when they did, they were just kind of keeping it to the perimeter, much like we saw earlier in the season, without utilizing all of the space. So hopefully, you know, they go back, they look at the tape, and they just get back to what they've been doing over the last couple of weeks, and they pick it up. Because 0-for-7 over the weekend, not too great when you're not scoring at 5-on-5.
Yeah, but we can say nice things about the special teams as well, just because we have to balance. Mondays are all about balance, right? The penalty kill has killed off 96% of opposing power plays so far in November, 23 of 24 chances. That's from Jonas Siegel's Monday morning piece in The Athletic, which is always makes me a little bit smarter to read, honestly. But what a great stat that is for the PK.
Yeah, the penalty kill has been electric all month long. And really everybody, like from top down, they've just been extremely suffocating on the PK. They're not giving up chances. I think I saw even their expected goals against per 60 is up there, top in the league. They surpassed the Carolina Hurricanes. So they're not giving up much. And special teams goes a long way when you're getting victories.
Absolutely. Let's bring in Mike Johnson, TSN hockey analyst. Mike, how's the weekend?
Very good, guys. How are you doing? It was a busy weekend. Seems like lots going on all the time, but all good. Happy to be back chatting with you guys.
What a hockey weekend. I had like the best hockey day ever yesterday. Yesterday was NWHL, Toronto Six versus Connecticut Whale, which was very confusing to me because I used to love Colton Orr when he was a Leaf, and he coaches that
right.
team. And then rivalry series, and then Leafs. It was just a great day. Sorry, Mike. I thought you were going to say something there. We ended with an awkward pause.
I like it because it's important to remember. Like, you know, we talk about the NHL all the time, but there's lots of great hockey going on outside the NHL, whether it's the NWHL or rivalry series or whatever it is. Like, I got to get my kids down to one of those NWHL games. My girls ask all the time to go with them, but I haven't been to one yet, so I got to get to one.
Oh, you got to do it. It looked like it was pretty packed at York yesterday, and I've never seen the Kingston game was packed.
Yeah,
it
that
should
was
be. Like it's good. Yeah, I mean, so they should be. So it's good quality hockey. It should be supported.
Totally.
So MJ, the Leafs with a nice 3-0 victory over the Islanders yesterday, but a lot of conversation over the last little bit has really been talked about their lack of scoring at 5-on-5. They're down 30% through the first 20 games compared to the previous five seasons. My question to you is, do you think this is due to kind of just bad puck luck, or is it because they're more committed to structure and playing more of a defensive kind of game the way that Keith really wants them to play?
Like everything, it's not just one. It'd be great to say, no, it's all bad luck. That's it. But it's never that easy. It's a combination of all the things that we're going to talk about. I think there is the element of puck luck. And I think, you know, people don't, we want to understand the game and we want to be able to say, this is why. And we don't like getting up in a place where we say, well, it's just bad luck. Or, you know, there's nothing you can do about it. It's just how it goes sometimes. Because that, we want reasons. We want rational reasons for things. And I think you talk about expected goals. I like to see it, Mike. You had a way to broaden yourself around. But if you look at the most goals scored below expected this year, so like who has not scored as many as they're supposed to, the Leafs lead that category by a country mile. They have like 18 less goals than they should have had based on the quality of shots they've created. So, I mean, you dump 18 more goals into an 18-game schedule, that's a goal a game, and all of a sudden we're not talking about scoring woes. So there is an element of they're not converting at the rate that they should, or even at a rate an average team would. And we know that, you know, their top players are not average shooters. They should actually convert a bit better than that. So I think some of that is just, you know, bad luck. I think some of it's Austin Matthews and him not being as healthy as he usually is. And he's the guy who scores a lot. Another element of this story that needs to be fleshed out is that, you know, I think they've talked a lot about kind of, you know, getting some grittier players, the guys who are around the net and banging and crashing for rebounds. And their rebound conversion rate is also the lowest in the league. So, you know, that's another area they're going to probably want to clean up, but also that will clean itself up over the course of time. So there's that puck luck, yes. I think there is the fact that the third line, while they actually have been scoring a little bit, like they're very much a defensive line. Now, they tilt the ice, they create scoring chances and goals, but, you know, prior to the last couple of weeks, they haven't scored very much, right? So, like, their job is to defend. And defend really well, and they've done exactly that. But they're not scoring as much, maybe as you know a Kerfoot-led line might have done in the past. They're not giving up anything, but they're not scoring anything. And the last bit might be that maybe we should acknowledge that, much to our chagrin as fans, and much to the delight of the coaching staff, the Leafs are playing pretty good defense.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
You know, like they are paying attention. And I'm not like Don't tell me that they haven't given up a lead. Like, there's like a dozen teams in the league that haven't given up a lead in the third period. That doesn't mean anything. Like, that's just every team in the league is good in the third period when they have a lead. But I just think chances, shots, high danger chances, expected goals, actual goals, which are influenced by, of course, Jack Campbell's standout, and apparently Walls as well, play. They are committed to defense and doing a good job of it. And that's probably all the reasons why they're down 30%. And if you just stay to the commitment side and then let the other numbers maybe just balance themselves out, they might be down a little bit in goals for, but their goal differential should be better than last year.
Yeah, we were talking about that before it came on the air. We said that the defensive play is like the Mike Babcock dream, how they've been locking it down recently.
Very ironic how 2 years, almost 2 years to the day, it was what, 2 years on the 19th,
yep,
where Mike Babcock got fired, and they're finally playing the Mike Babcock way.
Mike, lots of stuff going on that top line, left wing. Bunting got another crack on it last night. Mikheyev is out, so that's something to note. He might be a good fit there with how good of a skater he is. But in Jonas Siegel's Monday morning piece, I said earlier, it always makes me smarter when I read it. He wrote something kind of interesting about maybe loading up that top line, adding Nylander there. Hilariously enough, my dad also said that last week, and I was like, Dad, no, come on. And then Jonas wrote about it this morning, so I was like, oh, my dad might have been right. What are your thoughts on that?
Maybe your dad's Jonas's ghostwriter.
Maybe.
And we have to ask Jonas about that. So I don't like that, no. I mean, like, in a pinch, you know, coming out of power plays, when you're down a goal, when you're chasing a game, and we've seen them do that, not necessarily with Nylander, but oftentimes it's Tavares, Nylanders, and Matthews after a power play, because Mitch Marner will kill and those guys won't. But no, I don't think you want to get to that too often. And while I guess it would work, why wouldn't it? They're all amazing players. Like the depth of your team, like the two pairs are kind of how your team is designed to play. Now, John Tavares has been great, but you put him with what, Bunting and Richie or something, like, that's not going to be as nearly as effective of a line. So I don't want to rob Peter to pay Paul. I don't want to take the second line and make it way less effective just to get that number one line going. I would just want to trust that those guys will be able to do it and figure it out on their own. Now, that does not ignore the reality is that left wing spot on the first line has been a work in progress, right? Like, Bunting certainly plays hard and a lot of energy, straight line guy. I don't know if he has maybe the kind of the offensive creativity to really maximize Marner and Matthews. You know what I mean? Like, they really read the play and where they want the puck and do some unique stuff with it. And he's not wired that way. He's like straight line, go to the net, and that's it. So maybe that's not the answer. Richie, just, you know, quite frankly, he hasn't been the answer either. So you got to find other solutions. Kerfoot, Mikheyev when he gets healthy. Maybe you got to look to the minors. It's a hole that needs to be filled, but my first inclination would not be to go to William Nylander, not on a regular basis.
In conversation with TSN hockey analyst Mike Johnson, Johnny, what did you make of Richie's play on the third line yesterday? Think that that's something that could work there and picking up his first even strength point there on the Kasha goal as well?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about. No, I don't. Given the way that line is used, I'd say no. It's not that he can't play on the third line. I'm not saying that, right? Like, in a different role. But given the fact that the bulk of their shifts start in their own end in defensive spots, like, I don't think I'd want him to take on that responsibility. Like, he's not that guy. Like, his quickness, his defensive awareness is not that as good as I would like it to be for the way that Sheldon Keefe utilizes that third line. If you're going to play him like last year's third line, offensive zone starts, you know, playing against the other third pair defenseman, playing with an offensive centerman, okay, we can have that conversation. That might make more sense, but that's not what the third line is doing. And what the third line is being asked to do, they have done really, really well. Kampf and Kasha, whether it's Engvall or whoever else on there, they've done a good job of it. And while I know they're trying to find a role, and I'm hopeful that I want him to find a role that he can thrive in. Again, my first inclination would not be there. It just doesn't seem like, on a one-off, sure, but I think over the course of time, that might not be the best fit.
Joseph Woll gets his first career shutout last night, stops 20 shots, and he looked really poised to me, not just on the ice. He made a couple solid saves right off the top there, just looking poised. But before the game, when he talks to the media, like, he looks really calm for such a young guy. The Leafs are not in a situation this week where they have a back-to-back. They play Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday. On that Cali road trip, do you think he's played well enough to maybe earn a non-back-to-back start, get Jack Campbell some extra rest?
Yep, I do. And I think not just because he's played well, but like that's what you want, right? Like you don't like, sure, Jack Campbell can play the next three games. You don't want him to play the next three games. Like even though he's playing well, you want him to get days off. You want him to get mental days and physical days off, even when there's days between games. So yes, I would 100% expect Jack Campbell to play against LA, of course, right? Former team, he's going to want that game, 2 days between. And then the coaches and the goaltenders will have this conversation about whether San Jose or Anaheim is a better spot for Wall. But I would expect Wall to play. I would expect them to pencil him in one of those second or third games. And this is the new NHL. Even the best starters in the league are better served playing two out of three games. 54-28, 55-27. Like that's the split that teams want to have if you trust in your backup. And Wall playing well enough in the second game here, you know, deserves another look. And just on a practical nature, has to get another look. And it can't just be back-to-back while you wait for Peter Mrazek to get back. So I would expect him to play, and he deserves to.
Yeah, I agree. I kind of pencil the game on Friday as the game that I believe I would try and get a look at him. And I mean, it does a really good thing for him too, because like you said, he's only played in back-to-backs now, so it's like, okay, what does he look like with a fresh pair of legs in front of him? What type of goalie can he be, and can he maybe actually be this team's backup of the future? And I know you've got Mrazek signed up long term, but if Joseph Wall can get it done and at a much cheaper rate, we already know that there's
Mikey.
Am I thinking ahead too far?
How many games he played in his
small
career?
Sample
I know,
size.
He's only played a couple of games, but Johnny, don't you got to figure things like figure this stuff out as soon as you can?
Yes, but that doesn't mean two games, man. No, yeah, sure, I understand. Does. Obviously, like the reality is, if you're going to sign Campbell, and of course they want to, then you're going to have to, they're going to want to trade Mrazek. Fair enough, right? You're not going to want $10 million in gold.
Right.
You're not going to want that. So Jack at 5 or 6 or whatever he's going to end up getting the way he's playing, you want your backup to make $1 million and to him be, you know, a quality backup at that rate. And so, yes, Wall is auditioning for that now, as he will when he goes back to the minors, as are the other guys in the minors right now. But I think we're just going to whoa Nelly on the idea that, you know, if he plays well in San Jose, maybe they can jump the gun now, trade Mrazek now to the Oilers. They need a backup, and then put him like, hang on.
I wasn't ready to do all that now. I think there's a little bit more you got to give him, obviously. But I just give him the chance while he's got it is all I'm saying.
Yeah, why not?
You know,
yeah, let's see what you have. Let's give him some looks and let's see how he does with them. But like most games, he's gonna play, what is 5, maybe 4? Like Mrazek's back on the ice. He's obviously gonna be better in another 2 weeks left on his LTIR. So he's going to get 2 or 3 more games, Will Wall. So, like, even if he gets shutouts in those games, am I going to say, okay, I'm committing to that guy for the future? Not even, but, you know, we'll have a more extensive discussion than if it goes the other way.
Right. In conversation with Mike Johnson, TSN hockey analyst, to bring it around the league a little bit, what's the bigger surprise for you out in Calgary? The fact that they're leading the Pacific and have 7 shutouts through 19 games, or that Andrew Mangiapane is currently second in the NHL with 15 goals in 19 games, just 3 behind Draisaitl in the Rocket race?
Oof. Well, I mean, 7 shutouts, I guess, is a bigger surprise, right? Because 7 shutouts is ridiculous. Like, it never happens. I mean, we're getting our stats notes, and they're approaching historical levels of defensive play and shutouts. So, you know, 7, 8 shutouts in 20 games just never happens in the league to start a year. So I guess I'd have to say that. Now, I did not have Andrew Mangiapane in my Rocket Richard conversation. His odds, I wish I could have gone into them much earlier. But I think if you look back now we're going to combine a whole bunch of stuff that doesn't really apply, but maybe it does if you stick with me. I think his last 3 or 4 games last year, he had like 6 goals. Then he went to play for Team Canada at the Worlds, and he had whatever he had, 9 goals in 6 games. And then he's come out here and played 15 goals in the 18 games they've played, 19 games. So he's basically a goal a game player for the last 30 games he's played. So I think like the confidence that he drew from the end of the year into the world and being the best player there, and then now with a coach that believes him, a team that's playing very well, rush chances galore, something he thrives in, we probably could have predicted an uptick on his career best. Like, we probably could have said, you know what, 30 is probably not out of the question. And that would have been a good conversation to have. But like, obviously not a goal a game on the road and not on pace to score 60. No, and he's not going to do either of those things. But I still think we probably could have set a hot start where he had, you know, 10 goals, 12 goals in the first 20 games. That wouldn't have been out of the question. Asking me if Calgary's going to get 7 shutouts in the first 20 games, I'd be like, hang on. Who's their backup? Dan Vladar? How do we say his last name? Darth Vlader, shutout boy. So, like, yeah, that, the shutouts would be the bigger surprise to me.
MJ, 4 Canadian teams in the top 10 right now based upon points percentage. So that's Edmonton, Calgary, Toronto, and Winnipeg. When's the last time a Canadian team won the Cup? 92, 93? Is that what
that
it is?
Correct.
Yeah.
I wasn't even a thought yet in the Montreal world. Are these teams all legit contenders, would you say?
Yes, 100%. 100%. I think we've seen, even the best team, like the absolute favorite, Tampa last year, I think their likelihood of winning a cup when they get to the playoffs is only like 18, 20, 22% likelihood that they win. So it's more likely that 80% likelihood that one of the non-favorites wins the cup. So I think the way these teams are built, the quality of players they have, the experience they've had, both good and bad. You know, I'm looking at you, Edmonton and Toronto, teams that have struggled in the playoffs. I think that all puts them in a position to say, absolutely, if they're in the playoffs started next week, they would all have good chances to win a Stanley Cup, which is exciting. I mean, it's been a long time, and I derive no pleasure, but I've seen a lot of it mentioned online, like, ooh, I guess this Canadian division wasn't so bad after all.
Yeah.
Like, somehow, like, validated for last year and the pot shots that people were taking at the Canadian division. Like, who cares? It was a different kind of year. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But I think what you can say is that those 4 teams are legit, and those 4 teams are all Stanley Cup winning contenders, not favorites. And I still think when healthy, I still think Colorado would be there when healthy, which is a long ways away. Tampa's going to be a just talking point. Florida and Carolina is the best team in the league. So they're not the top 3-4 favorites, but they are close. And that's a good thing. I like that. That's exciting. We listen, 93, quick math, we're coming up on 30 years. Like, come on now. Like, uncle already. Like, just we have a quarter of the league. We should win a quarter of the time. That's not been the case. So it's time to to get the cup back in Canada at some point.
Well, I think one of the teams that are not bidding to bring the cup back in Canada at any point are the Vancouver Canucks. dropped another game last night to Chicago, a game that they probably should have won. Like, Fleury standing on his head, looked like vintage LA or a vintage Vegas Flower, a 40 save shutout in a 1-0 win. I mean, when things are going as bad as they are, and then you lose a 1-0 game like that, like, what's the mood like in that room right now, you think, MJ?
You're very irritable, very pissed off, very grumpy, because you know what? They have games where they play poorly and they lose. They have games where they play well and they lose. They have games where they score and they lose. They have games they can't score and they still lose. Like they're finding different ways to lose all the time. And I've been on bad teams. I'm not trying to rag on the Canucks or their players. Like, I've been on bad teams. Like, that's how it goes. Confidence is low when you're not that good of a team. Different parts of the game pop up seemingly on a nightly basis to foil your best efforts. And last night, they were better. They played hard. They were the better team. They should not have lost. But sometimes the goalie stands on his head, and sometimes that seems to happen more often when you're a bad team. So what I'm curious about is that team was built to be successful. It's not like, you know, Ottawa even, who's, you know, not there yet. They're not supposed to be competitive just yet. They're not Arizona rebuilding. This was a team that made trades, moves this year, brought in Garland, brought in Ekman-Larsson to be better this year. Signed Jaro Halak as a backup. Like, they're supposed to be good. And their contractual situation is very difficult to unwind in short order. So are they going to continue down this path of, we think this team is good enough to contend, which would be insanity because they're not. If they decide that, which they should, like, how what changes are made? And you can say, well, change the GM, change the coach. Okay, fine. The roster is still the same. Like, the new GM is going to come in. He's like, okay, I can't make these defense any better, and I can't trade them in their contracts. So I don't know what that new person, whoever it is going to do. That is going to be fascinating. Just, like, how long do they commit to this path with these people? And even if they deviate from it, what changes can they actually make? I will be curious to watch because there's no easy answers.
No, I agree with you, but I also kind of look, you know, a little bit east of them in Calgary, kept the same core, just changed out the coach, Daryl Sutter, and all of a sudden he's got that team looking like cup contenders. I don't know if that can happen here in Vancouver, but it is a question, and it's something that I know a lot of Canucks fans are trying to get right now, realistically.
Yeah, you're right, and you could change the coach, and there would be certainly an uptick, because there always is. Not even about
your
trying
bump,
to train.
Yeah,
it's just
the
like new, the new coach bump. You're going to get everyone's attention. Everyone's going to focus and everything else. But the new coach is still going to have, you know, Tucker Poolman on a 4-year deal and Ekman Larson on a 6-year deal and Travis Hamonic on a 2-year deal and Tyler Myers with 3 more years. Like that's not changing. Those guys aren't going anywhere. So you're going to have to devise a system that can somehow insulate those players and try to maximize the forwards, which do have some pretty good depth and some talent there, and get the best out of them. Maybe there's something there, but I think they're kind of fundamentally flawed in the back end, and that's going to be an issue no matter who's the coach.
Right. All right, MJ, always a pleasure to chat with you every Monday morning. Thank you so much for joining us.
All right, squad. And I'm going to call your dad, Julia, and I'm going to get my insight for next week from him.
I know. It's like he's always right every time. It's just a dad thing, I think.
That's what I tell my kids every day.
Yeah.
I do know what it is.
You're
being
right.
A dad.
It is. It is. You're right.
Take it easy, MJ.
All right, guys. Have a good week.
There he goes, TSN hockey analyst Mike Johnson. And you said your dad's coming down to Toronto.
He's bringing Persians.
Bringing me some Persians. I am so fired up about that for tomorrow. You don't even know.
You got a Paul Teixeira critique on your charcutes.
I did. He said I need to cut my cheese thinner.
It's something he feels passionately about. He likes his cheese sliced thinly.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't blame him. It's a preferential thing. And to be fair, I didn't cut up the cheese, so it's not on me, and I'm not going to sit there and you know, yell at my own father about how he cuts his cheese, because he's got some preference.
Oh, you got to stop saying cut the cheese. We got to move on.
Good point. Alexis Lafreniere, 2020 first overall draft pick of the New York Rangers, joining us next, actually. So we'll get to chat with him in just a moment here. I'm Mike DiStefano. She's Julia Teixeira. You're listening to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.
It's so easy to get out of your car lease at Canada's number one lease takeover marketplace, LeaseBusters. Avoid penalties and early termination. Go to LeaseBusters.com. Let's bring in Alexis Lafreniere, first overall pick of the 2020 NHL draft. Now a forward for the New York Rangers. Alexis, last time I interviewed you, you were going to the World Juniors for the second time, and I was going to university. Look at us, adults.
yeah,
not bad. Before we get to last night's game, you've teamed up with Kraft Peanut Butter on this amazing campaign called Protection for Peanuts. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that and your involvement in the campaign?
Yeah, you know, people might not know I'm allergic to peanuts, and you know, I you know, Kraft did a really good job to help you know, Canadians to, you know, pay for their, you know, medication for allergies. So, you know, I decided to join them to actually help people like me, medications are really, expensive, and, you know, you gotta, buy some every year. So, you know, for Kraft to do that, it's pretty cool. And, they have a whole, website about it. It's called protectionforpeanuts.ca. So, if you guys want to have a look, it's a pretty nice cause, and I'm really happy to be, joining them.
Well, Alexis, what does this campaign mean for Canadians living with a severe peanut allergy and for those who may not be able to afford life-saving medication?
Yeah, I mean, it means a lot, you know, to have some help from Kraft. It's huge, and you know, growing up, you know, I had you know, the struggle of you know, not knowing what to eat, and you know, always have to carry your medications for allergies and stuff like that. And you know, it's really huge for them to do that, and you know, I'm really, really happy to be a part of it.
On to last night's game, Alexis. It was a really exciting finish in Buffalo, or against Buffalo, rather. What was the vibe like after that buzzer beater?
It was pretty fun, to be honest. You know, we were all expecting to go to overtime, obviously, and then you know, they made a quick play and we scored. So you know, it was pretty fun, and the building was really into it, so it was really a nice ending for sure.
Alexis, I always like to ask young players this question, but what was your welcome to the NHL moment where you kind of said, like, wow, this is the NHL, whether it was playing against somebody in practice, in game? Where was that moment where you just said, wow, I'm in the show?
I would probably say my first time I played against Crosby. Mm. It was obviously pretty special. Growing up watching him a lot and being on the ice with him, I was probably the time I realized I was in the NHL. So it was really special, obviously, and it was a great moment for me.
And you got to play him quite a bit last year, being in a division and the way that, the schedule kind of set up. You got to play him a lot. But after a weird rookie season, schedule-wise, how nice has it been to experience different cities and play against teams not in the Metro?
Yeah, it's been really fun just to be on the road with the team and, like stuff like going out to dinner with the boys and, just playing in different buildings with the crowd now. So, it's different than last year for sure, but it's really fun this year, obviously.
We've got Rangers forward Alexis Lafreniere on the phone right now on Leafs Lunch. Alexis, is there anyone on the Rangers who's really helped you out in terms of figuring out the ins and outs of just being an NHL player and just New York City in general? Big, big change for you, obviously.
Yeah, I think just a group of leader here. They've really helped me. Kreider, Zibanejad, Strome, guys like that. They're really have been huge for me, and they're still really helping me a lot. And I try to follow their lead a little bit, and try to see what they're doing on a daily basis to be a pro. So it's really a lot of learning for me, and it's fun to have them by my side.
Alexi, you guys are currently third in the division right now. What's been behind the early season success for you guys?
We're playing as a team, and we added some great pieces this summer, and they're really helping us. We had a lot of different players. We have skills. We have physical players. We have players that work really hard. So it's really good for us to have that mix, and we're going to try to keep playing as a team and keep getting better.
Alexi, we'll let you go off this one. I got a question. I'm an avid hockey card collector. Are you a hockey card collector, Alexi?
No, I'm not. I was growing up a little bit. I had a couple cards, but not anymore.
Do you own any of your own cards? Did you end up getting your hands on any of the rookie cards yourself?
No, I don't. I don't own any cards. My dad has a couple, but I don't have any now.
I got a couple. I got the two original Young Gun ones. You took them. It was a weird photo shoot that you had to take. You took that before, though, you got drafted. What was that experience like with Upper Deck?
Yeah, it was pretty special, and just to be able to wear the jersey for the first time, it was pretty unreal, and to be shooting that was weird a little bit, but it was pretty fun.
Yeah. Canadians can learn more by visiting protectionforpeanuts.ca and help spread the message so that no one has to pay more for life-saving epinephrine injection pens. Alexi, thank you so much for joining us today, and good luck with the campaign, and good luck the rest of the way on the ice.
Thank you.
There he goes, Alexis Lafreniere, the forward and former first overall pick of the New York Rangers. Want to play some Stay or Go from last night? Get into last night's game a little bit?
Sure I do.
All right, Chris, hit it.
Well, I suppose we should get going.
All right, everybody, stay right where you are.
Get the hell out of here.
No, you stay here.
You gotta get going, so go.
I'm sorry you came.
Time now for Stay.
Nobody got a gun to your head.
Or Go.
I'll be back.
I want you to stay.
We love a little re-re on a Monday. We went a little bit off the board with our stays or goes because we've already talked about a whole bunch of lovely things that the Leafs did this weekend that we'd like to see them keep doing. Here's something that we haven't talked about yet. Wayne Simmonds. Wayne Simmonds very obviously did not like being healthy scratch for the first time in his NHL career. And he's been dynamite since. For example, last night he had 3 shots on goal. 2 of them were from the slot. And he had a team low 9:41 ice time. So, like, how long have I been saying on this show, Simmonds is due? I swear Simmonds is due. One of these is going to go in.
He's very good at finding the right parts of the ice. Like, you talk about slot shots, and you look at slot shots per 60. I'm sure he's among the league lead because it seems like in almost every game, he's getting a couple of opportunities, and they're just not falling. They're not dropping for this guy, and it really goes. The whole team is struggling to score at 5-on-5, and he's one of them. But I recall hearing Sheldon Keefe saying how he wants to get him just a little bit more ice time as well, and I think he threw him out there on for one power play shift yesterday just to get an extra like 30 seconds of ice time, and I think he's rewarding him for the strong play. So, you know, Wayne Simmonds, keep playing the way you are, keep being physical, keep playing a solid 200-foot game, and eventually they'll start to drop because you're due.
And he was one of the guys. Lots of people have pointed back to that Chicago game when the Leafs came back and won as a really pivotal point in the Leafs season, rather. And Simmonds was one of the guys in the dressing room, apparently, that really, really was vocal in terms of getting the team going. So you can't discount how much that intangible is worth off the ice.
And one of the goes... Islanders fans, they can stop booing Tavares.
Oh my gosh, it's over.
It's been a few years now. You're not even in the same building anymore. I think eventually you got to kind of, you know, get over it. It's just like right from the drop of the puck. It was just the boo birds were out there. And then through the entire first period, every time he touched the puck, he was getting booed loud, loud, loud. So, I mean, get over it. They've had more success than Toronto has the last few years anyway.
You chanted, we don't need you. Just go with that. This is what this reminds me of. My friend, I don't know, broke up with this guy. They had a bad breakup. And it was years later. It was 2 years later. We were at a karaoke bar. He was there. He wound up being there. She got up on the stage and she sang Carrie Underwood, Before He Cheats. And we were all we were like, come on, you're embarrassing us. Like, this is over. You should be over this by now. And that's exactly what Islanders fans look like to me. You should be over this by now. It's time.
Yeah, it's definitely time. Hopefully it's just because it's the first game in the new building. But like you said, Tavares has more wins in the new UBS Arena than the Islanders do themselves. Also, another weird quirky stat from last night.
Uh-huh.
So 74 games prior, they played 74 games in the Coliseum, in Nassau Coliseum. Didn't get a single shutout. They're 1-for-1 in the UBS under Joseph Woll. Got it done.
Not bad.
Not bad at all. Okay. Bonus go.
I don't like this go. I don't want it to go.
Matthew's mustache is going to go at the end of the month. He has reached his goal of $134,000 for Movember, and he will now be shaving off his mustache, his wonderful, lustrous mustache, at the end of the month.
I'm upset about it. It's for a good cause, so you got to support Men's Health in November. But come on, I'll miss the muzz. I hope it comes back.
It's gotten to the point now where it's going to be weird to see him without the mustache. Like, he's had it now for like a year and a half.
Yeah, I forget what interview I watched with his mom, but I remember her saying that she liked it too. So, like, I don't know. I hope he'll grow it back.
Yeah, the muzzy is going, but it's for a good cause, for Movember. And I believe you can still go donate to his Movember as well. So go ahead and do that for a great, great cause for men's health. I'm Mike DiStefano. She's Julia Tesheri. We've got our Leafies. We're doing quarter mark Leafy. So not just from the weekend, we're looking at the quarter mark, and we're giving away some, or we're talking about some of the awards. We got our unsung hero, most improved, a bunch of different stuff we're going to be chatting about. You're listening to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.
Honor. Prestige. A celebration of...
The waitress tripped on the cord.
Presenting the Leafies, a celebration of leafness.
What am I going to do with the award? Nothing. That's the least of my concerns right now.
On TSN 1050, the Leafs live here.
Welcome back to Leafs Lunch. Julie Tesheri, Mike DiStefano with you as always on this Monday morning. And we've got the Leafies. We always do the Leafies after a weekend of Leafy hockey. But today it's especially special because it's the quarter way mark of the season. So you can say that these awards, like, they mean a lot.
Yes, they mean so, so much. These are clamps stamped in stone. And, after 20 games, the Leafs have a record of 13-6-1, 27 points, a .675 win percentage. They sit second in the Atlantic Division behind the Panthers, fifth overall in the league. They got the third-ranked penalty kill, the seventh-ranked power play, winners of 11 of their last 13. So things are going pretty, pretty, pretty good for Leafs Nation after a tough, tough start. But let's go through it. Let's go through and give out our Leafies at the quarterway mark. Let's start with the unsung hero. Who are the unsung heroes? Julia, we'll let you start off with this one.
There's not one, but two for us, AB, and it's Kampf and Kasha. This duo is so good. Kampf specifically is so good on the PK, and he's 57% in the faceoff dot. And then this line, MJ was talking a little bit about the third line and how they're obviously the defensive shutdown line. And they're doing exactly what they were supposed to do coming into this year. They just get 14% offensive zone starts, and they still hold, like every time they start in the defensive zone, they always wind up in the O zone, creating an offensive opportunity.
It's incredible. I mean, you take a look at what they're doing with these 14% O zone starts. They hold a 50% Corsi and a 50% goals for percentage. And as a shutdown line, that's incredible because they're going up against the team's best offensive players, and they're basically negating opposing teams' offenses by going on the offense themselves, starting it through defense. And that's exactly, like we spoke to Kristen Shilton last week, that's exactly how she said the Leafs are trying to play. And it's kind of the identity that third line is really establishing in playing from defense out, and it's they're creating offense off it too. Last night, the second goal of the hockey game, you know, it gets chipped in, Richie gets a puck on it, chases in after it, good forecheck, ends up able to get it to Kampf, who sees Kasha coming into the slot, and then next thing you know, it's 2-0, and they have a cushion now, a cushion. Then they could sit back, play well defensively as a team. So, you know, the way that they've been playing in their own end, the way that they've been killing off penalties, Kasha now tied for the team lead in goals at 5-on-5.
Just like we all expected.
Right? Like, this is incredible for a guy who's making just a hair over $1 million for the team leading in 5-on-5 goals. And here's another interesting nugget. So far, in 20 minutes of penalty kill time, he's yet to yield a goal.
Yeah, really impressive. I suppose that's with the caveat that he generally is the sixth man out.
The fourth forward out there. But, like, I mean, that's pretty, it's still pretty incredible. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to downplay that stat.
No, not at all.
Not one bit. Yeah. And just the way that those two have really come in and they've committed to a defensive play, it's allowed the Leafs to really take kind of that next step and build towards those Stanley Cup winning habits that they speak about.
Right. Have we even said on this show before that they were like friends growing up, played together growing up?
Yeah.
Sheldon Keefe said something last week to the effect of he doesn't even know if he cares if they do or if those two care if they score, but they've just bought into the system. Yeah. And we said when we were talking to MJ how that was the Mike Babcock dream. Like these two would be the Mike Babcock dream.
Absolutely. Most improved. We're going to give it to the penalty kill. Yeah, we're going to give it to the kill unit. 24th in the league last year. They've kicked that all the way up to third in the NHL. They lead the league in expected goals against per 60 on the penalty kill. They just surpassed the Carolina Hurricanes. So, I mean, they're just suppressing so much, and they own the best shot share margin at 21% while killing off penalties, too. And, I mean, last night they scored, I think that was their first shorthanded goal, if I'm not mistaken.
It was their first shorty, yeah.
First shorty, and that was just a really nice play, and Marner coming off the bench, and, you know, they were able to get possession, and Muzzin spots him, and away he goes. Nice little backhand, nifty goal there. So, they're also getting some offense. Last night was the first time that it actually converted, but they're at least getting chances.
That was an awesome stretch pass from Muzzin.
Yeah, it was. It really was.
We haven't even talked about Muzzin at all, but Muzzin had a really tough Saturday, and then I thought he turned it around pretty well yesterday. Thought he looked good.
Well, our Just Okay Award goes to
Muzzin.
Jake Muzzin.
And I thought he was okay. No, just okay.
Yeah, and I think this is more so just you look at the splits from early in the season to what he's done lately. He's been a lot better lately, a lot, you know, like you said, it's still very off and on sometimes for him. And we can even do the pairing of Muzzin and Hall together realistically if we wanted to. But Jonas Siegel in The Athletic had a great little chart of the first 2 weeks of the season compared to the last since November 10th. I think that was the date that they got put back together. You know, the goal four differential, they were -8 in goal four differential through the first couple weeks, a +3 goal differential in the last 11 days. So, you know, they're playing a lot better, and it's allowing, when that duo plays better, this team is in a much better situation.
Yeah, no one was expecting this duo to be a problem coming into the year. So as soon as it was a problem, it was a glaring one.
Most likely to turn it around.
Auston Matthews. And I don't even know if he has to turn around. The pucks just have to start going in for him. Like, two goals, 3% shooting. Like, it doesn't make any sense for Auston Matthews. What does he usually shoot around, 15%?
Yeah.
Yeah, like this is not going to last for Austin Matthews. I know Johnny didn't want to say it's just bad luck. They got to start to drop for Austin.
They got to.
Maybe the Muzzy shave will kind of switch things up for him.
Perhaps. Maybe that's what it takes. You got to shave the Muzzy off.
You got to change something. Sometimes you just got to change something.
Just change it up. And I remember Jose Bautista was always known for that. And one day he would have a completely full beard and then, you know, he goes into like a 4 or 5 game slump. Boom. Clean shaven, and then he starts hitting dingers again. Because maybe the same thing will happen here with Austin Matthews.
Totally, he's second in the league in expected goals. Like, they have to start going in.
That's what's so bizarre is the fact that like he's expected to score at this point. And when you look at Austin Matthews, and you look at the way that the rate in which he's getting chances, his 2 goals at 5-on-5 is just 3.7% shooting. His career average, like we said, is 15%. He should have about 8 goals right now at 5-on-5. Based on those career averages, he has just 2.
Yeah.
So, and the team themselves are not scoring at 5-on-5. It's not just him. It's the team. I saw a stat out there today that they are on pace to score 1 less goal at 5-on-5 this season than they did all of last season. Here's the caveat. Last year was only 56 games. This year is 82.
Yeah.
So in 26 less games, they're expected to score the same amount of goals. That's not going to happen because eventually these expected goals should yield results like we saw happen with Marner earlier in the year. And Austin Matthews, I think, is the number one guy who's likely to turn it around, and we'll start to see production come real, real soon.
The expected goals will become real-life goals.
Yes.
Which is always what we want to see.
What we expect. It's what we expect.
Nice. Team MVP so far, I feel like it very clearly is Jack Campbell.
It's 100%. Jack Campbell. I mean, this guy's had to pick up a lot of workload that he wasn't expecting to with the Mrazek injury. I mean, for that alone, just putting his team on his back and coming in and playing well, playing hard, consistent on a night-to-night basis, to me, makes you the team MVP. And then along with that, he's leading in almost every single possible goalie stat in the NHL. As of now, I believe that he is the leading candidate for the Vezina. And he's played himself into Olympic contention.
We got to get Johnny back on the phone to calm you down right now.
But I mean, this guy has been playing unbelievable this season. And he 100% is that at the very least, he is the team's MVP.
And as an aside, Mike Sullivan confirmed over the weekend that his name has been tossed around for maybe that third spot at the Olympics.
Yeah, which makes total sense. Makes total sense to me.
And it got broken to him in a post-game presser, didn't it?
It did, yeah. And he was just said like, "Oh, that's really cool. I did not know that. Thank you so much." So hopefully he does make it. I hope he makes the team. I think he deserves to make the team. What do you think is the? What are you grading Sheldon Keefe at?
I would like to give probably an A.
Yeah.
Like I like how reactive. I said this last week, I think, but I like how reactive he's been in that if something's not working, he's willing to change it, and that was obvious from Saturday to Sunday.
Yeah, I think I would. I think I agree with you. A-. I'll say an A-. I'll give him. And, you know, along with Dean Chenault and Spencer Carberry.
Oh,
Manny
they get
Malhotra,
all the flowers. Yeah.
They're all getting A's. The whole coaching staff as a whole getting A's, the way that they've been able to get this team to really buy in and play a game and establish somewhat of an identity. Because I keep, every time I talk to out-of-town media, they always say, I didn't expect for Toronto to play, you know, so hard and play so well defensively. I expected a track meet. That's not today's Maple Leafs. It's really not. And it's the coaching staff that's got them to buy in. If you missed any of today's show, you can find it on tsn1050.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Mike DiStefano for Jewett to share. You've been listening to Leafs Lunch. Gameplay with Mark Rowe and Nikki Reyes next.